Lane Gardening for the Gulf Coast. With Mobile's award-winning garden expert and chief horticultural advisor for Mobile Botanical Gardens, Bill Finch. We'll talk about living and growing on the Gulf Coast. Now, your personal yard and garden consultant, here's Bill Finch.
Hey, welcome back. It's a Gulf Coast Sunday morning. Lots of fun things going on. I got my technology back. I now actually know the text that you've been sending me. All the things you've been saying about me that you thought I didn't hear. I hear you. Patty sent me a text, and it was back early in the show. It was, she wanted me to identify, this was, it was back early in the show. She wanted me, I hope you're still listening, Patty, you wanted me to identify a plant. It's a, smell it, Patty. Take some leaves. Just take one of those leaves, if I'm looking right, and crush it in your hand and smell it. What does it smell like? Spicy. Can you smell it, Patty? Smells nice and spicy. That is a ginger. That is one of the gingers. And I can't tell you which one it is without flowers. The fact that it doesn't have flowers leads me to believe it is shell ginger, which is a zingiber, I think, but it's a zaroon bed. Is that right? No, it's not. It's a shell ginger, and it doesn't always flower for us unless the foliage overwinters. And this would have been the winter that it would have flowered. That may be my bet, but it's a ginger, and you can smell it. And Patty, you tell me if it doesn't smell spicy, sharp, spicy like ginger, you call me back and let me know, and we'll figure it out. We'll figure it out. Dan, thank you for liking my Range Rover Farmer comment. I'm going to get in trouble for that one, but I'm glad you enjoyed it. I did get a message saying that the problem with the world the problem with the world is that a flower man's trying to solve it. The problems. And listen, so I have this mild proposal. I have this modest proposal. I don't know much. I can't fix the world. I can't solve. But if we were going to save Alabama, wouldn't we want to understand Alabama first? Wouldn't we want to understand how Alabama's different than other places? In some ways, worse than other places? In the sense that we have a harder time growing tomatoes in Mobile than other people do. We got to understand that. We don't grow apples well in Alabama. We're not northern Germany. We don't grow apples well in southern Alabama. But we do other things really, really well. We don't grow navel oranges in Mobile that well. But, boy, we grow Hamlin oranges really well. That's about understanding Alabama. That's trading on what you do well. Now, if that seems like that's too much advice from the flower guy, okay. But it seems pretty normal to me. Seems pretty normal to me. Hey, Jim, in Georgetown, this is the vine that makes great salads. And so that's, you're right, Jim. It's smilax. Greenbrier, sawbrier, but it's a very typical kind of greenbrier, sawbrier. Has many names, smilax. This one is called Jackson Vine. Jim, you notice that it, Jim will notice that it has no thorns on the upper part of the vine. So if you've got that vine with the big root that has the thorns on it, if you've got one that has leaves that look like a lance spear, very narrow, right? Very narrow, much narrower than they are, much longer than they are wide. Narrow, like a lance spear, like a long lance spear. And if you and they don't have thorns on the upper part of the branches, that is Smilax smallii. That is the Jackson vine. is a name for it. I don't know where it got the name Jackson Vine. That's curious. But it's called Jackson Vine. It may be a corruption of something else, but that's what people call it. It's a beautiful vine, actually. It's great. And Jim knows that it is delicious to eat. In fact, it's been a huge commodity in Alabama for a long time, a big important part of Alabama diets for a long time, until we came along and forgot what a great, delicious thing it is. Smilax, Smalley, Jackson Vine, you mostly fight it because you think it's going to... It's native and it can't be good because it's from Alabama. We got to get it out of the yard. You know those Alabama things, man. We can't tolerate them in our yard. But it's a great, delicious thing. Smilax Smalley. If you want to know how to identify it, you call me. Jim, it's got seeds on it. And the seeds, I don't know if the seeds are edible. I'll tell you, I just don't know, Jim. But they certainly make new plants. Charles, I think that white on your fruit is a result of irrigation. If I'm wrong, you give me a call. It looks like it's getting sprayed with a little bit of irrigation. It's getting a little bit of calcium on it from the irrigation system. I think that's all. If I'm wrong, you give me a... If it's not getting a splash of water, you let me know. Hey, Steven, I'm listening. What's up?
Bill, how are you today?
I'm good. How are you?
All is good. I don't know what this tree is actually called. I call it the camphor tree or whatever because it smells like Campo Phoenique whenever you break open the leaves and the bark and such.
Hey, you got it. I think that's as good a name as any. Camphor tree is what most people call it.
What are uses for it? Because you can't kill it, that's for sure.
That's right. It's a member of the cinnamon family. It's, in fact, the Latin name is Cinnamomum. That's the first name. It is the bark, I think, like many members of the cinnamon family, the bark is used medicinally or for spices. I would not use this one for spices.
Right.
I suppose you could make up some medicinal use, though it's probably much easier to find the camphor in some other quantity. But it's a member of this Cinnamomum. It is from this plant is from it's probably from originally from Vietnam or China. It was introduced here fairly early on. I would say probably in the late 19th and early 20th centuries, and for a while it wasn't a problem until the climate warmed, and the climate got warmer. We used to have temperatures that would hover, that would drop down to 10 degrees with some frequency, and every time that happened, those camphor trees would just start exploding. Back during the 80s, people remember the camphor trees, the water in those camphor trees and the bark just exploding off the sides of the trees. Not enough to damage anybody, of course, but it would just crack and begin to just swell and crack with freezing temperatures. And so there it is. And so now it's pretty weedy. It comes in mostly in people's yards. I don't see it out in the woods that much, but boy, does it come in the yards. I get thousands of plants in my yard.
Grows up in my azaleas right now, and I got to go in there and I'll cut it back, and it comes back within a year or two.
That's right. And once it gets big, it gets to be really hard to deal with. One thing you can do, if you'll take regular Roundup, just regular old Roundup, don't get anything fancy, just regular Roundup concentrate, and you don't have to buy a lot of it, just buy a little bit of it, and put it in a little jar and get a paintbrush. And when you cut that plant back, if you'll take that little paintbrush, you know, a small, like, quarter inch wide paintbrush for the house, and just dip it in that, and don't spill it on anything. Just put it in, and then wipe it on the surface. Wipe it where you cut. Leave as big a cut surface as you can on that plant, and then spread that, paint that on the surface of that plant. And it'll probably kill it, or it'll knock it back real, real bad.
All right, good deal. I appreciate it. I'll send you that picture of that that crepe myrtle that was eating the live oak.
Oh, I have to. That was yeah. That's cool. That is super cool.
And you can find that one in Midtown, just east of Murphy High School.
Yeah.
If you ever riding through there.
Yeah. So you know what happened, of course, is the crepe myrtle. I think probably the crepe myrtle was there first, and the oak jumped into it, and will eventually outgrow the crepe myrtle, I guess.
Well, hopefully not.
Yeah, all right. Hey, we gotta take a break. We're going to be back.
Thank you, Bill.
Thank you.
I was raised in the country, that's a natural fact. Food on the table from the garden out back. Everyone working to make the land their own. Where the silver queen grows, running with your cousins from yard to yard. The living was easy, but the playing was hard. Didn't have much, nothing comes for free. All you needed was your family. I am a country girl. I've been around the world, and every place I've been ain't quite nothing like living in the South. Oh, wanna shut your mouth. I am a country girl. Country girl.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Welcome back. It's the Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. Lots of things. Dan, that looks beautiful. You know, nasturtiums have lasted a long time this year, Dan. What do you think? I think mine have lasted longer than usual and without a lot of help, and I think it's because it's dry. It's crazy, isn't it? They like it dry. They like it very dry. Dan's got a gugusa in flower. C-U-C-U-Z-Z-A. Gugusa, right? Did I say that right? People who know. Is it too late to plant, Rosa Sharon? No, sir, no, ma'am, not too late to plant. Listen, one of the things to do, it's not too late to plant anything you want to plant. The one thing you have to remember is to water. And you're going to have to water pretty religiously if we don't get rainfall. It actually is probably better to plant them now, in the next week or two, than it is to plant them back in March, when people usually plant, because in March we get the droughts at just the wrong time. So we had this terrible drought in July, in June, late June, and in July we're going to get Gulf summer, which means lots of rainfall. So if you forget, the rain may pick it up for you. Sean, picking those passion fruits, they're usually going to turn a color. It's going to be yellow. The color is going to be dull. It's going to get softer skin. John in Irvington, though, that is a Nyssa. That is Mr. Nyssa, N-Y-S-S-A, otherwise known as Tupelo, otherwise known as Black Gum Tupelo. She's as sweet as Tupelo honey. It does have flowers. They're small. The bees love them. Tupelo flowers. They're really famous for the bees. That's a Tupelo tree. You can tell. I'll tell you how you can tell. We'll come back and talk about that if you want me to talk about it more. Charles, if I'm wrong about your Meyer lemon, if you're not sprinkling it with irrigation water, let me know, because I'm curious now. Ross, I'm listening. What's up?
I'm officially not planting any more squash.
Yes, sir.
It's just... last year and this year, they're all gone. What would be a decent vegetable substitute to plant with those who were planted?
Squash. Let me tell you about it, Ross. Ross, I'm right there with you, man. Man, I have been through it myself. We, yellow squash and zucchinis are very vulnerable, to... the squash vine borer, and that's what got it. And man, I've been through the heartbreak, because I tried to live like I was living in Ohio, you know, I tried to pretend like I was living in Tennessee. I didn't want to believe I was living in Mobile, and I didn't want to believe that the squash vine borer was just a force to be reckoned with here, and it is. But you know what? The squash vine borer, sort of like the boll weevil, that we have a little thing. We have a little monument too, as Greg points out in Enterprise, saying thank goodness for the boll weevil because it got us off cotton and let everybody grow peanuts. So here's the funny part: the squash vine borer put me off yellow squash and turned me on to the really great varieties of squash that resist the squash vine borer. Are you ready for this?
I'm ready. And also, where can I buy it?
Yeah, so there's all kind of seeds out there. One of the squashes, the easiest one to find, perhaps, that is very resistant to squash vine borer is Trombone Chino. And it's easy because you can remember the name. It's like trombone. Trombone Chino. It's typically an Italian name, and it's theoretically an Italian squash. Except the truth is, it's actually native to the Gulf Coast. Isn't that funny? The Italians are growing it, and we're not smart enough to grow our own native squash. It's actually native to the humid parts of the Gulf Coast, where there's lots of bugs, and lots of squash vine borers. And Trombone Chino is a delicious squash. You pick it when it's young. You pick it when it can make fruits the size of trombones if you let it go, but you pick it young. When the fruits are about the size of a small zucchini, and they're absolutely delicious, they're great to cook with, they're kind of famous. The reason it's resistant to squash vine borer is because the stems are solid. And so the squash vine borer can't get into the stems and wipe the plant out. There's another one, Korean ball squash. It's called Korean ball squash because the Koreans are smart enough to take our squash, our Gulf Coast squash. To explain this to me, I don't understand it. I don't understand it. They took our Gulf Coast squash, which we quit growing because we all had to grow the same squash that they grow in Ohio, and they took it and they made a Korean ball squash out of it. It's absolutely delicious. It does great, and it is resistant to squash vine borers. And the other one is Gugutsa, which we just talked about. It's a kind of a squash relative, Gugutsa, C-U-C-U-Z-Z-I. I'm not sure where Gugutsa is from. I think it may not be from the southeast, but Gugutsa is another one that is a great squash that people are talking about. We actually have a little song on there about growing Gugutsa. And it's another one. The one thing you have to remember about all these is that they're vining squashes. They're not little bush squashes. So you have to build a trellis for them, which is easy to do, and they will cover that trellis in no time. They're absolutely wonderful things, and you can get the seeds from several places. So there it is, Trombone Chino, Korean ball squash, Gugutsa. They all do real well. They're resistant to squash vine borers. Does that help?
That does. I just need to find where I can get the seeds.
Yep.
And is it too late to plant the seeds now?
No, it isn't. That's a great thing about them. I think they'll do real well. It's not the perfect time. It's a little hot coming in, but I would go ahead and plant them if I think they're going to take off and do real well this fall. Either Korean ball squash, Trombone Chino, Gugutsa, give them a try.
Thank you.
You're welcome, Ross. Call me back. You got any more questions, Tony? If I got time, talk to Tony. Or are you going to put a? Okay, Tony, I'm listening. What's up?
Hey, Bill. Hey, I've got a couple of problem children in my yard. Actually, one of them is it's a vine, and I know you've seen it before. It grows. It doesn't seem to have any foliage. It's got tons of thorns on it, and a tuber in the bottom, and they are incredibly prolific, and they grow everywhere. I've been told you got to dig the tuber up to get rid of them, and I'm wondering if you've got any tricks to get rid of those. The other one is, my wife calls it a cashmere bouquet. It's a plant. It's got a flower about the size of a softball, but it's lots of tiny little flowers. Doesn't have a whole lot of smell, a broad leaf, but they're incredibly prolific. We planted a couple of them, and they took over a whole corner of our yard. And I've been hacking them up with weed whackers and stuff like that, but is there a better way to get rid of them?
Yeah, so here it is. The reason it's called Cashmere Bouquet, I've decided that is an ironic title. It's a funny. Somebody decided to make a funny. It does have an odor. crush the foliage and you'll see, and you can decide whether it smells like a cashmere goat is what it smells like. Cashmere bouquet. It's a kind of a famous thing. It's one of those pass along plants. The danger with pass along plants is that people pass them along because they run out of control in their own yards and they're trying to figure out ways to get rid of them, and so they give them to you and then they run over in your yard. They're a problem. I think they're pretty susceptible to Roundup. I would if you don't want to, the leaves are nice and broad, so it's easy to take a little bit of, to use my Roundup paint technique and just paint a little bit on the leaves. You don't have to spray it all over everything. Just paint a little bit on the leaves. It'll translocate to the roots. You don't want it to happen fast. You want it to happen slow so that it moves into the roots. All of those plants are connected by the root system, and you'll get hundreds of plants dead at once. You might have to treat it twice in case there's any roots disconnected, but it should work very well on getting rid of that plant, which is a big nuisance. The vine that you're talking about is the one that we talked about on the show, Greenbrier, Sawbrier, Smilax, Jackson Vine. It's the one that a lot of us now have learned is quite edible. Does yours have thorns on the upper part of the plant or not?
I believe it does, and they climb. They just grab anything.
That's right. That's right. They all do that. Some of them have vines all over. They can be a bit of a nuisance, and they're a problem. What you have to do for that, you do in theory have to dig up the tuber, but it's also the same thing. You can help control them with Roundup by taking the vines, particularly when the vines are young. Once they've hardened up, once those leaves have hardened up and gotten a wax coating on them, they're very resistant to Roundup. But once the leaves are young and tender so that you can easily tear them with your fingers, you know, just tear them apart really easily when they're very fresh and young, they will absorb Roundup. Here's what I would do. If it's the edible version, which is absolutely delicious, I'm telling you, it's one of the things, it is actually used as an ornamental in a lot of places because it doesn't have thorns on the top. The leaves are long and narrow, much longer than they are wide. Is that the way yours looks?
Well, they sometimes seem to have a few little, long, very skinny, I guess you could call them a leaf at the top, but they really don't have a lot of foliage anywhere else on the plant.
Right.
It's just the vine going up.
So that's Smilax, and that's Smilax smallii. It's Jackson vine. It's absolutely delicious. Those young shoots, if there are no thorns on the upper part of the plant and the leaves are narrow, those young shoots are absolutely delicious. They're a delicacy. They've been eaten for a long time. Just, by the way, I'll tell you this. You don't care about eating, do you?
Well, but how do you prepare them? I'm curious.
And yeah, so you should try them before you get rid of them. And then you can call me back next week and we'll talk about how to kill it. So if the young shoots are coming out and they're still fresh and tender, and they may be hardened off now a little bit because it's rain, but they'll put out new shoots. They are absolutely delicious. And in fact, I just had somebody call in, just talked to one of our listeners who said, boy, I'm using these in a salad. They're awful good. You can use them in a salad. You can I make them like a little asparagus spears and serve them. I served them to my mom, and my mom, she doesn't like anything strange at all. If I had told her what I was serving her, she would have freaked out. But I made some for her, just like asparagus, and she said, ooh, this is good asparagus, she said. Where'd you get this?
Well, I heard that call, but I thought, surely he's not talking about these miserable thorn-encrusted things in my backyard.
Well, it depends on whether they got thorns all the way up or not. If they don't have thorns, check it out. And if the leaves are narrow, if they don't have thorns, the thorns are only in the lower part of the vine, and not in the top part of the vine, like only in the lower fifth of the vine, not in the top part, then you got Smilax smallii, and it's a wonderful thing. I can tell you 15 gajillion ways to use that vine. It is beautiful. It's a wonderful thing. If it's one of the other Smilax, they're harder to use, and I'll help you get rid of it. But check it out first. Figure out which one you got.
Will do.
Call me back next week.
Thank you, Bill.
All right.
down south. How the weather in the Delta, how the food tastes in your mouth.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
I don't even remember that from last week. Did we hear him last week?
I don't know. I think maybe we escaped.
Yeah, somehow we did. But that's the sign of a really good show, I guess, is when
Tiny doesn't make the lineup.
Or when he does.
Yeah.
Since he does more than not, it better be a side of a good show. Hey, lots of good questions here. The question about so Tony sent me pictures. Tony down on Fowl River sent me some pictures of vining squash. It looks like he's got trombone chino. He looks like he let some of it go a little bit long, but you can use it even when it's big. It's just, you have to use it a little differently, but Tony's tromboncino is doing really well. So we're getting there. Somebody sent me a picture of some tomatoes that in containers. That must be Chris and Pace. Sometimes the questions don't get connected to the pictures that I have to connect them to them, but I think that's Chris and Pace. Yeah, Chris, I mean, it's just, it's early blight. We get it late. I don't know why it's called early blight here. We get late blight early and early blight late. Figure it out. We're the world upside down here in Mobile. And on the Gulf Coast, that's early blight. You're always going to get a little bit of it. It's not bad right now. I think you're going to be okay. I think you're fine. It's something that eventually gets all tomato plants unless they can outgrow it. And some plants actually can outgrow it. It's harder for plants in pots to outgrow it. On the other hand, there you have better air circulation in pots, so they tend to escape it a little bit longer. I think you'll be okay. There's not anything you can do about it. How's that? And I think your plant looks reasonably healthy. Just keep it watered. Somebody sent me a picture of wonderful picture of stink bugs. Lots of stink bugs. And they said, are these beneficial? Well, they're beneficial to other stink bugs. No, they're not good for your tomatoes. In fact, they're going to extract the juices out of your tomato. They're a big problem. Let me just say, a vacuum cleaner is what you need real quick. I'm serious. Find that vacuum cleaner. Get a little vacuum cleaner with some good pull on it and just suck those boogers up as quick as you can. Or put a little paper bag under it. Tap the plant until they drop off. They're going to drop beneath the bigger ones will fly off. The younger ones will tend to drop into the bag underneath. You need to get rid of them. They're stink bugs. One of the ways to tell if an insect is beneficial or if it's not beneficial, it's not always invariable, but this is a good clue. If you see lots and lots and lots of bugs that are all alike and they're all in one place, you can pretty well guarantee those are there to eat your plant. If you see only a few, if you only see one or two and they're widely separated, you can figure, oh, those are beneficial. And here's why. It's like, it reminds me of the Serengeti. It reminds me of being out on the African savannah, and you see these big herds of buffalo, right? Just thousands of them. And then over here, you got one or two tigers. Why are the tigers less common than the buffalo? I'll let you figure it out. It's a numbers problem, right? The tigers are eating the buffalo. There's always going to be more buffalo because they're eating the plants. The tigers eat the buffaloes, and there's always very few tigers. So the beneficials are going to be rare. They're going to be scattered. They're going to be usually occurs singly solitary. Now, just because something occurs in large numbers doesn't mean it's harmful to your plant. But in this case, when you see them climbing on the fruit like that, you can pretty well guarantee, yes, sir, whoopee, boy, they are going for that fruit. And they're going to leave little bitty holes in the fruit where they drill. It creates all kind of bacterial things. If you have any questions about how to capture them, you got to get rid of them. That's it. And they're all clustered there together. They're easy to get because they're all still young and clustered together. That's the big mama jama, sitting there on the sides that's black, that's with the big spines out of her back, the little orange ones. Them's the babies or the juveniles. Knock them into a bag before they do any more danger, or use a little... Yeah, I'm serious. Use a little vacuum cleaner. Use technology when it works. It works really well. There are some really good people I know who are doing that all the time. Curling leaves on the purple hull peas. I don't know. Is it? I'll have to take a look at them. There are some virus problems. There's some virus problems that develop. It could be a drought. It could be, I don't know. I just have to see, Johnny. I can't tell you right off the bat what's causing it. Listen, this is a good time, and let me just interrupt your Sunday morning to remind you that it has been dry. It has been very dry. A lot of places in Mobile and Baldwin County are in first stage of drought or near to second stage of drought. This little bit of rainfall that came through, it was good for some folks, not good for some folks, because some folks didn't get it at all. I think the airport got a 16th of an inch. No, I'm sorry. Got 0.16th of an inch. Which is not quite the same thing. They got about a tenth of an inch of rain, in short. And in closer to Midtown, probably got somewhere between a half inch and an inch. There may be some other areas that got more, but it was pretty spotty. Here's the thing. Right now, we've got to water to keep things alive. This is the time of year when we really lose plants. It's not in midsummer. We don't lose plants to drought in midsummer. Isn't that weird? If you're in Michigan, that's where you lose plants to drought. But here, it rains every day. We get these kind of scattered showers. It starts raining. We don't tend to lose. It's this time of year before those everyday showers start in May and in early June. Late April, May, and early June, it's the big drought time here along the Gulf Coast. And we've been in that drought time, American summer drought. Typical. So what if you've got some new plants, you do need to water. You don't need to water them every day. You don't need to water every day. In fact, most, if you water them once a week, most shrubs and trees, they're happy. You don't even have to water them a lot if they're new. Just a few gallons. Just make sure it's right there at the roots where the plant is. As the plants get mature, you got to soak the ground. You can't just soak the plant. You got to soak the ground around the plant for a large area. But what you want to do is you want to make sure that water long on established plants so that the water goes in 6 inches deep. This makes perfect sense. That's where the roots are. It doesn't help to get the little top surface wet. You really got to get it wet deep. And once it's wet 6 inches deep, I promise you probably won't have to water again. You may not have to water again until October, because we'll have the rains coming on. But you got to get things wet 6 inches deep on established plants. Young plants, they're going to need that little bit extra watering. If you've got questions about how to do the watering, you got worries about how things are doing right now, let me know and we'll talk about it. We'll make it right. We'll do it right. Greg sends me pictures, and this is just a reminder. Greg has sent me got a lot of pictures from Greg, a lot of notes from Greg today. Really good to hear from him. And one of them is a picture of crookneck squash, which he's done very well. He said it's starting to melt because the squash vine borer is coming after him, I suspect. But you can get it. You got to get those. You got to get them in really early. And some of us, like in Midtown, we can't get them in early enough. Greg, it's just amazing. You know, it's that squash vine borer. But let's listen to some good music here for a second.
I decline, I ain't gonna pick no peas. Because everything is on the phone, you know you got to go. I'll get down on your bended knee.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
All right, welcome back. It's the Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. Dan is an elephant. He never forgets a question I fail to answer. Is that not right, Dan? So, Dan, I failed to answer all of Dan's questions last week because he sent me a lot of great pictures. He's out in the pitcher plant bog. And so these great pictures, really fun pictures of plants in the pitcher plant bog. Dan, the smaller yellow flowers that are four petals, that have the four petals, the simple four petals, is another Rhexia, R-H-E-X-I-A, we have terrible common names for plants here in Alabama because we don't know where we are and everything is called Joe Billy. That's a Joe Billy plant. That's a Bubba plant. Okay, listen, that's a Rhexia deer grass is the name for it. But I call the big pink ones urn flowers. U-R-N, because they look like big urns. I don't know. They just, if you look at the seed pods, really cool. This yellow one is the yellow Rhexia, Rhexia lutea. Let's just call it yellow deer grass, yellow Rhexia. And the other one is really fun. It's a Polygala. And it's another lutea. It's Polygala lutea. And it is candy root. Candy root, which is a good name because it has a great flavor. It tastes like licorice when you pull the root up. Now, I don't know that it's common enough where that picture was taken for you to pull the root up. But it's candy root is the name. I won't tell you. There's a terrible name that I hate. I personally hate the name. I despise the name. It does not capture the essence of this plant. Some people call them bog Cheetos. I hate that name because they don't taste like Cheetos, which tastes terrible to me. I hate Cheetos. And I love candy root. It's a cool plant. And Mitch, man, I got to deal with that lawn. But listen, let me get to Patty first. I'm going to try to get back to you, Mitch. Patty, I'm listening. What's up?
I have several gingers on the property, and for some reason, this one has never bloomed.
Yep.
And I fertilized it. I don't know what the difference is.
Yep. So, but you did smell the foliage, and it was smell like ginger, right?
I'm sorry, what did you say?
You did crush the foliage and smell it?
No, actually, no.
Okay. Well, I think it's a ginger. And I was going to get you to crush the foliage just so we can make sure, because it should smell like a ginger. So you'll crush the foliage today, and if it doesn't smell like ginger, then you'll call me back. You know, it's got that sharp, spicy smell.
Okay.
It's probably, I'm thinking that it is, it's what we call, I'm thinking it's shell ginger. And I mean, you know, I'd have to look at it a little closer, but I think it's what we call shell ginger. The foliage has to, on shell ginger basically is what we call a short day plant. It only blooms, it's like poinsettias. It basically only blooms during short days, and effectively that means that the foliage has to survive the winter. If the foliage survives the winter without getting a lot of winter damage, then it will flower. And that happens every now and then. If you cut it back because the foliage looks a little ragged, then it won't flower. If the winter cuts it back because it's too cold, then it won't flower.
Well, we have in the past, it has died back in the winter, but this particular winter, we kind of have a microclimate here, and it did not die back.
Did not die back.
It's been this way for 2 years now.
Yep. So it may flower yet. It may yet flower. We'll see.
Okay.
My gingers are, most of my gingers that normally don't flower are flowering this year. But it is one of the gingers, probably shell ginger is probably what it is. But it could be, you know, if I could smell it, I could know. But I can't figure out how to get you to get me send me a picture of the smell. But it could be one of the Japanese gingers, like or the Southeast Asian gingers that are in the Galangal group, Galangal, G-A-L-A-N-G-A-L, which are edibles. But I don't. It's hard for me to tell right now, just based on the single
well,
picture foliage.
Okay. I will go smell it. I apologize. You may have said that on air, and I didn't hear you. So before I called, so I will do that, and I'll call you next week and let you know what I find out.
Yeah, and see if it didn't. You know, the flowers may pop out any day now and surprise you. We'll see.
Right. Okay. Well, thank you, Bill.
All right. Good to talk to you, Patty.
You too.
Okay, now listen, we got Mitch. Boy, man, somebody sent in a picture of shell ginger in bloom, which is blooming, because of the mild winter this year. Mitch, that yard has got problems. Man, that yard is... Mitch just got a house, bought a house with some dead spots in the yard. And, man, to say that it had some dead spots in the yard is kind of an understatement, isn't it, Mitch? Well, let me tell you, when you got a yard that large, you're always going to have problems. There's no miracles. There's no miracles when it comes to lawns, because lawns are just... I mean... There's no such thing as a lawn in nature the way we have them with one plant. But there's some things that can do better, that'll make that better. I think the soil in that area is pretty compacted. I mean, my bet is that the soil is very compacted. And for whatever reasons, it was compacted. It looks like it probably had centipede grass, which is the weakest of all grasses. I can tell by the big circles... that there was some kind of infection or infestation. It could have been a thousand different things affecting your yard, but you see how things are moving in circular patterns. So it could have been that looks like maybe some kind of pretty severe fungal disease that you had. Mitch, what you're going to have to do, and you don't want to do it in the whole yard, and we're probably going to run out of time to discuss exactly how to do it, but you don't have to do it in the whole yard, but take places of your yard where it bothers you most, where you want to make it look really good. And I'm trying to say this in a way so that you'll hear me without freaking out. You're going to have to crack the soil. You don't till it. Tilling it will make it worse. Tilling is the worst thing you can do for our soils. Tilling it turns into a powder that recompacts. Yeah, it'll feel real fluffy at first, but if you can get the tiller down deep enough, which you probably can't, but it'll feel real fluffy at first, but then that it's going to, because it's so fluffy, it's going to recompact, and it's going to be even denser than it was before you tilled it, and much harder to deal with. You want to crack it. You don't want to turn it into fine powder. You just want to crack it. And to do that, you need a fork. You need a fork to do it. And so, Mitch, what's going to have to happen, because I have 30 seconds to do this, you're going to have to call me back next week. And we're going to have to talk about how to fix that lawn a piece at a time, a significant piece at a time. And it's not as hard as it sounds. It's really easy. And it makes all the difference. It's very simple. You need a fork, a good garden fork. You need pine bark. Each piece no bigger than your fingernail. And then you need a good grass, a decent grass. There's no good grass for lawns. We'll be back next week.
My girl, My girl, don't lie to me.